curated to encourage leaders at all levels to be their best selves and to bring a fresh, curious perspective to today's issues in business and culture. Our goal is to equip listeners with the resources to always move forward.
Welcome to the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. I am Carla Soans, and I'm here with Ron Kitchens. How are you doing today, Ron?
I am awesome.
There we go. Well, Ron, I am excited about today's topic. We have been talking about bringing this topic up on the podcast for some time now, and the topic is knocking down barriers. And it's not only a chapter in your book, but very recently we were talking about, in fact, over the weekend, you watched a movie that you were talking about, and it really got me thinking, and I'm going to have you talk a little bit about the movie in just a second, but it really got me thinking about the quote that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said about injustice, and injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And as we're talking about knocking down barriers, what a powerful reminder of what injustice really is and what that means. So on a more lighthearted note, you went to the movies.
I went to movies. I saw the movie The Best of Enemies, which is an incredibly powerful book and movie about desegregation in the Durham, North Carolina schools in the early 70s. And it really is. It's amazing acting. It's an amazing story. But it's about this idea of communication and people don't know each other. And about this idea that most of our prejudice and segregation are economic issues. You know, and we're an organization that lives by the belief that the greatest force for change is a job, not because of the job. You know, jobs have value and they give you high appreciation of yourself. They change how you think about the world. But they put money in your pocket and they give you economic opportunity. And that's really what it's about for us. But it gets me thinking about how do we knock down more barriers in our world that sometimes we just don't see because we're either too far from them or we're too close to them. But we don't see that they're keeping other people from living their best life or keeping us from crossing the street, if you will, metaphorically, and having access to a whole new world.
So, Ron, I know this is a topic that kind of is near and dear to your heart because of the way that you grew up and where you grew up. And in particular, in your book, you talk about this idea has come up multiple times in the book, in multiple different chapters. But one of the really powerful stories that you told was a story about your great-grandfather in the book. Will you share that story with the listening audience? Because I think it's a really powerful expression of how walls or barriers sometimes exist, and it could just remain that way if somebody didn't challenge it.
Yeah. So my great-grandfather, Ernest, was an incredible guy. So during the Depression, he lost everything. So he owned the local drugstore. His brother owned the local merchandise store, and his other brother was the only doctor in town. And they all went bankrupt. They lost everything they had because their customers couldn't pay them. And so he went from being a very successful business owner to working as a machinist in a bicycle shop making bikes. But he was this incredible man of purpose. And so I tell the story in the book that as a little kid, my grandfather, who was the kind of big male influence of my life, my grandfather, I was in the garden picking rocks, and he had a half an acre garden. And so there was always work to be done there. And I'm picking up rocks and I discover a rock that has a name on it. And I realize it is a tombstone. And so I'm convinced at this point that their body is going to come out of the ground and get me. And so I run in to tell my grandfather what I found. And he thinks it's hilarious. And he tells a story about my great-grandfather, Ernest, that during the Depression, people didn't have money for burying their loved ones or headstones. So they would be buried in a pauper's cemetery and an unmarked grave, essentially. And they would take a tin can and cut it, flatten it out, and then take a nail and drive marks in with the nail, little holes in it to spell out the person's name and the dates if they could. And then they would put that on a wooden stick and they would mark the grave. Well, they would fall down and they would rust and they would disappear. So Ernest hand-carved letters of the alphabet that he then would hand pour little blocks of concrete, and he would put these wooden letters in and make headstones for the people because he wanted people to be remembered. He thought it was really important because these weren't bums. These weren't people that had lived bad lives. These were people who the economy collapsed on and went from, in this case, one side of the cemetery fence to the other side of the cemetery fence, to the pauper side. And there was literally a fence up. And so after he got all the headstones done, and there's still, by the way, a lot of those headstones are still in the cemetery in my hometown in Ozark, Missouri, and that Ernest got really upset about the fence being up. And his best friend was a man named By Kelly. And Mr. Kelly was the only black man I ever met my whole life growing up. He's the only black man in our town. And he was Ernest's friend. And so he and Mr. Kelly took the fence down between the two cemeteries. And because they didn't believe that there should be a line, a wall between the haves and the have-nots. No, he didn't do this because he thought he'd end up there. My family had purchased blocks of cemetery spots. He knew there was a place for him. He knew there was a place for his children if they wanted to be buried in the cemetery. This was about taking away that stigma in death that people should have never had in life. And so he went one step further. He cut the pieces of fence, and I have one, you've seen it. I have a piece of this fence at my house, and put them up on the windows of our family home. And so it's my family, seven generations of my family lived in this house, put them up on the window kind of as a screw you to the community to say, I did it. Here's why it is wrong, what was going on. And those bars stayed up on that window. So I grew up in a house with bars on the window, and it was the only one there. And I never knew why those bars were there until I found that headstone, which, by the way, was a broken one that he couldn't use. And so he put it in the row of the garden. But it wasn't until I found that question that my grandfather told me why those bars were up on our windows. And there's why I keep one today in my office to remind me that my job, some days, all of our jobs, whether it's economic barriers, whether it's social barriers, whether it's gender barriers, whether it's racial barriers, if there are barriers holding people back from achieving their greatness that was put into them, that our Lord, whatever your belief system is, everybody was born with greatness put in them. If there's barriers diminishing that, it's our job to knock those down. And sometimes it's to knock those down and say, I did it, and here's why. And if you don't like it, come at me. I have the power to defend my decisions. Those people don't.
I know for our team, you always have said to us, you know, don't assume that a wall or a barrier or a certain rule is in place for a good reason. It may have been created at some point for some reason, but it might not have been a good reason then, and it may not be a good reason now. And you've really encouraged our team to challenge and change conditions, not only socially and globally as we make impact, and certainly in our community, but also even in things that are just programmatic, like internal things in our organization, that there are systems and there are policies and there are rules at times. But you've always said, you know, in order for us to be a high performing team, I need to know that you're going to be willing to challenge things that you don't know why they exist.
Yep. And say, somebody tell me why it exists. Challenge and change our best every day if it's no longer serving us. I mean, we had this discussion with our team members at a recent meeting that, you know, 12, 14 years ago, you know, our dress code at the office looked like IBM's old dress code. You can wear any color suit you want as long as it's blue, brown, or black. And, you know, any color shirt you want as long as it's white or blue. And so, but that's not us at all because society changed. And I'm in jeans most days, more days than I'm in a suit, and certainly a lot more days than I have a tie on these days. And it's okay. If we'd have stuck with that old rule, we'd have looked like fools today. We'd look like morticians. The funeral homes don't even dress that sincere anymore. So, you know, we've got to challenge and change things. And don't assume the people that came before us are wiser. You have to understand why they did it. and then make a decision to change it. Can't just change it because you don't like the color of it. But, you know, walls are meant to be climbed, going around, gone over, gone under. And if none of that works, paint them, put a nice flower box on them, and move on.
Exactly. And I know I mentioned that you talk about this in our team quite a bit, but I know you had a plug for the listening audience on really making sure that people are taking time and really being consciously thinking about what walls or fences, in the case of the cemetery, could be torn down.
Yeah, I think we all ought to be looking for what those fences are. And in our home lives, in our leadership, in your community, in your church, what are those things that we assume are right, that if we saw with a different lens, it would cause us to challenge it? You know, the movie we mentioned, The Best of Enemies, you know, the whole idea, premise of that is about, and it's a true story, it's about a Ku Klux Klan leader and a activist in the African-American community in Durham and school desegregation, and how their belief systems change when they begin to see things through each other's eyes. I think the best movie I've seen, and it's going to sound like I'm socially engaged, you know, in this woke movies kind of thing, but I think the best movie I've seen since I saw A Star Is Born, which I know, you know, I'm mad in love.
You got a mad crush on that movie.
But is The Hate U Give. Holy cow, it's a great movie. And it causes you to look at life from a different perspective. You know, most white people listening to this have never seen a movie filmed where the story's being told from a middle-class African-American perspective, and it happens to be told from a, you know, sophomore in high school young girl's perspective. But it is incredibly powerful because of the change in perspective. So put ourselves in a place where we can see a different perspective. We can see, you know, what do we look like at the dinner table with our children? Are we on our phones? If we are, what are we telling them when we're got our head down on our phones? You're not important. You know, that's a perspective that we can change. Look at those things in your own life, your leadership, and the things you're doing. I got yelled at the other day by somebody I really respect. And they said, I'm tired of you disrespecting me in meetings. And I said, well, what are you talking about? They said, you start all meetings 5 minutes late. And I know you're waiting for other people to show up, but I was there on time. And it's disrespectful to me that you do that. And you need to know it's hurting our relationship. I never saw that perspective. I thought I was being kind to the people I was late. But by looking at it through his perspective, I absolutely see what he was saying. I apologized. He accepted it. But I'm going to do a better job of starting on time and holding people to the expectation that disrespect is going to happen by them not being on time, not me insulting everybody else there. But it's a change in perspective. So if we as leaders can just do that, I bet there's fences we're going to tear down. There's fences that are, mostly don't have to even be torn down. They just evaporate because we're no longer willing to respect them. You know, the status quo was created to keep people at average and below. Nobody ever created the status quo so everybody could be great. That's not what it was created for. So just knocking down the fence of the status quo will go miles to changing all of our worlds.
And thinking about perspectives, you can, you know, sit here and think about what it would be like to be in another person's world or to be viewing life from the way that they view it. But there's nothing like a good old-fashioned conversation and asking the question. And
ignorance is the enemy.
Sometimes that may feel uncomfortable at first, but learning firsthand how and why somebody operates the way that they do almost always provides a level of perspective that you would not even be able to imagine if you just tried to put the pieces together yourself.
That's right.
You can't do it that way. You have to ask the questions.
We have to live in community. And too many of us live in community with just people who think like we do or sing like we do or act like we do or look like we do or went to the schools that we do. But that's never what the best look like. The best organizations, the best teams, the best anything. You know, can you imagine a choir where everybody sang exactly the same? It would sound flat. All the voices, it would be monotone. So why would we want to live in a life that's monotone? But those of us that have power and influence to change that, to walk across the room and say, hey, can we be friends? Man, it doesn't just work in the second grade. It works everywhere and always will. So walk across the room and ask somebody, hey, can we be friends? I always took graham crackers when I said that.
I think coffee is a more appropriate adult, trick in your sleeve. But, you know, graham crackers might work for you, too. I don't know.
Neither you or I are drinking coffee anymore.
That's true. But I still appreciate tea? If somebody says, can we go to coffee? I am still in for that experience.
We're just both going to drink tea.
Or decaf.
Yeah.
We're those people. Well, Ron, it's kind of a drop the mic moment. I think you've not only expressed why it's been so important based on your childhood story, but just really encourage the listening audience to step outside of that comfort zone and to think outside of your own lane and to begin to look around you and think about what barriers, what fences, what rules, what systems may be in place that it's time that they need to be taken down.
Yep. And it's just good business. It's just good organization. It just puts more people in the pews of your church. It just puts more customers in your store. It just is what the future looks like. So don't wait for it to be. You can either be a victim of change or a victor in change. It's 100% up to you. Go kick down a fence today and be a victor.
Well, I am excited about that future, and I'm excited about future podcasts with you, Ron Kitchen. So with that, it's a wrap for today, but we've got more in tune next week.
Awesome. And please go buy a book.
Yes, go buy a book.
Thanks for joining us. We hope today's conversation inspired you to keep moving forward on your leadership journey. To connect with Ron, you can tweet him at Ron Kitchens or send him a message via ronkitchens.com. If you are listening via iTunes, please leave a review. It really helps us connect to you, grow our impact, and keep moving always forward.